This is Confessions of a Book Collector. I'm your host, David Headley, and I'll be exploring all aspects of publishing and book collecting, interviewing best-selling and upcoming authors, and sharing insights on inspiring books, both new and old. Welcome back to Confessions of a Book Collector. Today I'm delighted to be joined by a best-selling crime writer, an author who I actually represent as the literary agent, and the author I'm going to be interviewing today is David Fennell. David Fennell came to Winchester Writing Festival a number of years ago and pitched his debut novel to me, which was called Sleeper. Sleeper is a Second World War set thriller. And then he wrote a second book called Sleeper the Red Storm. But actually today, what I want to concentrate on is his fantastic debut crime novel and best-selling novel, The Art of Death, and his upcoming novel, See No Evil, which is published on the 28th of April. Welcome to the podcast, David.
Thank you for having me.
So, as your agent, I have read all of the books that you've written, obviously, a number of times and a number of drafts. Tell me about The Art of Death and the inspiration, and maybe tell the reader more about your protagonist, Grace Archer, and Harry Quinn. Obviously, I love The Art of Death, and I love Grace. I also want to challenge you that maybe Harry Quinn is just a little bit closer to home for you, maybe.
Well, I don't know about that. But, well, first of all, The Art of Death is a serial killer thriller, if you like. It's set in central London, and it tells the story of a newly appointed detective inspector, fresh from the NCA, who joins Charing Cross Police Station. And on her first day, she's given a case that nobody wants, and is to look at some obscene art installations in central London, Trafalgar Square to be precise. So she investigates these with her detective sergeant, Harry Quinn, who's a caustic Belfast man. I'm sure that's what you're referring to
when
you
say. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I don't know about that. But so what we have is a situation where we have this serial killer who catfishes his victims and then uses their corpses as art to display online and in various locations in London that are then streamed live. So
that's the premise for
The Art of Death.
And a brilliant premise it was too when you pitched it to me originally. What inspired this novel? Because obviously I had read the two previous books and they were set in the Second World War and they featured Will Starling, who was an absolutely brilliant protagonist. But what inspired you to move from that genre then into writing a present-day crime series set in London?
Well, prior to writing historical thrillers, I'd always had my goals set on writing crime. And looking back at some of my older work, you know, going back 10 years or more, a lot of it is crime novels, you know, but I just kind of forgot.
Really?
I guess gave up at one stage. Now, you know, I did a master's in creative writing 10 years ago, and then I was writing a lot of crime. But in my final year where I had to submit a master's, you know, all my fellow students, they'd all come up with their ideas, but I didn't. And you know, my tutor at the time was kicking my ass and said, you need to get on with this. So I thought, you know, yeah, I do. So I just came up with this concept for the Sleeper very, very quickly, and then just kind of wrote that, you know, in a painstaking period over several months, you know, and submitted it as my master's, and then refined it much later, and then obviously submitted it to your good self.
Good. And the rest is history, as they say. But you were saying that you did a master's. Was that really helpful in honing your skills as a writer?
Definitely. And I think, you know, master's degrees are much maligned, and I think unfairly so, you know, although it really depends on who your tutor is and who you study with. But I think the first thing I'd say is that you do not need a master's degree to be a writer. You don't. And second thing I'd say, a master's degree is not going to make you a writer, and it's not going to make you a bestseller, certainly. In my view, you're either a writer or you're not, you know, and it's something
that's true.
Within you.
Yes.
But what master's degrees do and what other writing courses do is that they put you into an environment with people like you, and you know, if you've got a great tutor, and I had a great tutor in Greg Moss at the time, and we were all like-minded people who were at the beginning of our kind of writer's journey, trying to hone our skills, who were passionate about craft, passionate about reading, and just wanted to do better. And, you know, we formed friendships, you know, we critiqued each other's work. We talked and debated about what was right on some books and what was right in our own work. You know, we'd go to writing festivals together. That's such a brilliant way to get yourself onto the scene and onto and to moving forward with your own career.
But we've also discussed this privately. You did do another course, and we won't mention that course, but that wasn't so helpful, right?
Yes, it was with an agency, and I spent a lot of money on that course. They're quite well publicized, these courses, and although I had a very good tutor on it, it was money down the drain. Right. I thought that was quite...
So it is about finding the right course for you and what you need from that course. Basically.
Yeah, I think with, you know, when agencies and people like that, or publishers even, run these courses, I don't think you get as much out of them as you would do from an actual academic course like creative writing. But in my own personal experience, this is, others may argue, I think when you do an academic course like a master's in creative writing, you know, there's so much more time invested in the actual craft and the academic side of it, and understanding how other writers have written, and that you get a different side of it than you get from, say, an agency course or a publishing course, which might be more superficial in the learning.
Right. And I guess in some ways you were quite privileged to be able to do that course and pay for it yourself. Lots of people wouldn't. So what would you say to somebody who would like to do a course or would like to be a writer? What advice would you give them?
I would say do it. I would say research your courses. Find out what it is they offer. Find out about the tutor and the support. And if we're talking about master's courses, I would absolutely encourage anyone, if they have the ability to do it. I didn't have the funds to pay for my master's course. My company paid for my master's course. At the time, I was working for a small company. They weren't making very much money. They were staying afloat, but none of us were getting pay rises, so we were working hard all the time. But there was a reserve of money set aside for everyone for education, you know, if anyone wanted to do a part-time degree. So, you know, I jumped at that opportunity to take on this master's, and they paid for it.
Great.
So I was very lucky. So I would never have been able to afford to do that, because they're quite costly.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I think if people have the funds, or if they're even their companies can pay for it, I would absolutely encourage anyone to do a course. And it's not entirely necessary. I think the important thing for writers, especially writers at the beginning of their career, and when I say career, I mean you are learning your craft and you are getting better. A career does not mean you're published. You know, if you're a writer, if you write, you're a writer. And so at the beginning of your career, I really strongly encourage people to mix with other writers, find a group and meet with them, you know, not online, although sometimes you can do that, I think, but just, you know, mingle with them. These are your peers, and talk and share ideas and critique each other's words. It's hugely important.
Great. And you said you've got lots of books that you'd written that you had forgotten about, because I guess you'd been honing your skills writing. And because I want to come back to The Art of Death in a moment, but it is interesting to me your journey, certainly from creative writing and then moving genres. How many books in the bottom drawer do you think you have, like many other authors?
Lots of unfinished work.
Really?
And nothing finished, and which is why I kind of ended up abandoning the crime. One book in particular I wrote was about a guy investigating the death of young Catholic boys, and I find that such a hard thing to write about, because obviously my inclination is to go dark with these things, you know, because it is a dark subject. But I find it very, very hard to write about that stuff. and gave up in the end.
Right. So. We'll come back to the inspiration for your darkness, because your books are incredibly dark. Certainly, The Art of Death opens with Grace Archer investigating these glass cabinets with three homeless men in it. And I won't say any more about the plot from there on in, but it is an underground artist called Anonymous, who I guess is the love child of Banksy and Damien Hirst, if we wanted to say who the killer is like. That's quite gruesome. And if you like gruesome crime fiction, you're going to absolutely love this book. And obviously, you're such a nice man, and you're kind and generous and funny and caustic, maybe. But you have a very dark imagination. Where does that come from?
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Well, I represent you. I know it's a good thing. But tell me about, where did this darkness come from?
Well, I think darkness is in all of us, you know, and I think
I don't think I could come up with the plot lines that you do.
Right, but we enjoy reading this stuff. That's what
But I wouldn't be able to have that imagination that you do. So
yeah, I think my background, you know, as a when I was younger, I loved darker side of things. I loved dark books, you know, dark crime books, horror. I loved reading Stephen King and Clive Barker, that sort of thing. And although I'm not, I've no aspirations to write a horror book, you know, I guess the dark side of crime is something that really appeals to me, whereas cozy crime is just not my thing. You know, I think on my website I describe my books as not so cozy crime. So I think it's, you know, that sort of dark imagination is something that I enjoy writing, you know. Right. And I'm not a writer who likes to focus on police procedural. I like relationships. I like the relationships between my detectives and the people they investigate. But the dark side of things is what motivates me.
Right. And I'm going to push you here, because I obviously represent a number of Northern Irish crime writers. And obviously you're from Northern Ireland. There is a darkness in the writing. Is that formed from your experience of being in Northern Ireland?
I think it absolutely is. I mean, it's growing up in the 70s in Northern Ireland. It was probably very different to your childhoods. You know, I grew up in West Belfast on a street called Springfield Park, which was like a mixed street sandwiched in between the Spring Martin Estate and Ballymurphy Estates. Ballymurphy being strictly Catholic, Springfield being strictly Protestant, and we were like sandwiched in between, and we were like a buffer in between the battling sides. You know, it was not unusual for us to hear gunfire. It's not unusual for us to, you know, see people shot, you know, or to be in the line of fire even, you know. That was kind of normal. And, you know, and as a kid growing up, you know, witnessing some of those things was difficult, although you become used to it. And seeing all that on the news, playing out on the news, made it even worse. So it's kind of, you know, I always find books as an escape from all of that. And naturally, I wanted to write as a result. And in fact, you know, there was an incident that happened at my school that that opened the pathway to my writing career. And one of the pupils at my primary school was caught in an explosion. And, you know, lost his arm and half his face, and came back to school. And, you know, afterwards, it was pretty horrible. But that, you know, we were told to write about that as a form of empathy and understanding, and as a way of, you know, us avoiding any suspect packages that we might find anywhere. And that kind of, you know, I find that a really amazing experience writing it. And that's, you know, my love of reading and writing kind of began from them.
Yeah, but I know that you also, you've mentioned authors that inspired you, like Stephen King earlier, and I'll come on to those later. So, The Art of Death, absolutely thrilling, brilliant introduction to Grace Archer, who, for me, is a wonderful, wonderful human being. She's got a traumatic childhood too. Her father was also a police officer. She lives with her granddad. She's really wonderful. Is she based on anyone, or is she literally a figment of your imagination, or who inspired this very strong female protagonist?
She's not based on anyone, which I hope is not disappointing. She took a while to put into shape. You know, it was important to, for me, you know, writing as a male writer, a female lead, to write someone who was as convincing and as authentic as I could make her. And obviously, it's the writer's duty to make your characters, especially your leads, as strong and as go-getting, and you know, because they're, you're going to fire a lot of stuff at them, you're going to make their lives really difficult.
Well, you certainly do that to Grace.
Yeah,
and she rises to the challenge each and every time. And so we'll move on from The Art of Death, which obviously did incredibly well. It was a Sunday Times bestseller. The second book that is coming out in April, as I mentioned, See No Evil, we learn absolutely more about Grace, but again, very dark themes. I mean, people losing eyes is quite gruesome. I don't want to give very much away on this book. All I will say is it is a killer who does gruesome things to their victims. Very, again, very dark. How easy was it to write this second book, or difficult?
It was very difficult to write. It was probably the most challenging book I have ever written. And you know, partly that was down to, it was written during lockdown. And, you know, we were all in a state of fear, you know, and we were all claustrophobic, locked indoors, and we didn't know what was happening, whether we would catch this disease or not. So it was written during that period.
So it kind of helped you in some ways.
I think so, definitely. And it's, and also, you know, with writers, the second book in a series, or just your second book, is always the most difficult one to write. You know, and certainly with my previous books, I found that you really need to up your game, and you need to up your game with every book. You know, but the second book in particular, I think, is pretty important that you up the stakes. And I wanted a killer who was, as you know, even more diabolical than
Anonymous.
Right. And you know, and someone who was more sinister, and you know, I wanted to retain the chilling and the macabre side of things, but also, you know, it's important to me, as with The Art of Death, it's important to me to retain a bit of heart. And that's what I want to say to readers. You know, don't expect, you know, if you're interested in reading my books, you know, it's you know, they're called gruesome, and they're called, but certainly the first one, there are not many deaths on the page, you know, and there's not a huge amount of blood and gore in the first book, despite the fact that it's sold as that sometimes. And actually, one of my favourite quotes, and I'll read it to you now, about The Art of Death, and I'll come back to See No Evil, is that it's a tense-as-hell thriller with a high body count, but a rarer thing too, one that's full of genuine warmth and humanity. And that was from William Shaw, and you know, and I love that quote. And you know, that's something that's very important to me in all my books, and it's certainly the case in See No Evil, despite the fact we have a macabre situation that Grace and Harry are trying to solve, a mystery of murders that they're trying to solve. At the same time, we have we learn more about Harry, we learn more about Archer and her backstory, and her, also her life with Grandad.
In some ways, I want to say I'm glad it was hard for you over the last 2 years, because this book is superb. You've really pulled it out of the bag. I'm sorry that it was a hard write, but honestly, I think readers are going to appreciate it, because it feels a much bigger book. I mean, you know, I love The Art of Death, and it is ingenious and it's clever. I think you've literally gone up a notch with this one. It's fast-paced. I didn't know a lot about who the killer was going to be. I did work it out, but because I read so many books, but it took me a while. And I thought it was ingenious, and I, you know, well done. It is really brilliant.
Thank you.
Where are you going next? So obviously we've got See No Evil coming out in April. Are you writing a new book?
Yes, I'm writing the third in this series. Can't really say very much about that yet, but...
But you're contracted to write
I'm contracted for two more now, so we've
just... You must have a brilliant agent.
Yes. I must introduce you.
Oh, well, I think readers have got something exciting to look forward to, but See No Evil is out, as they say, on the 28th of April. David, this is the part where we go into the confessional, and we talk about your love of books, your book collection, and the books that really mean a lot to you. You mentioned earlier about Clive Barker and Stephen King. Who would you say were your big inspirations as a child growing up?
From the earliest age, I would say I just loved the Tintin books, and I still love them now. And I collect those. You know, as you know, I'm a book collector also. And I also loved the Sherlock Holmes books. I loved Ian Fleming's. I loved Roald Dahl. I loved Enid Blyton.
And do you collect those authors now?
No, I don't. But, you know, if I seen an original, I would, a first edition, I'd probably pick it up if it was at a good enough price.
But so what do you have on your bookcase that is very special? Do you have a first edition that you absolutely adore having?
Yes, I've quite a few. And so is the question, which one would I take with me?
Well, I mean, the question is, which one do you prize?
There is one book that I prize above everything, but it's not a first edition.
Right.
And it's, you know, my mum and I used to talk about books all the time. You know, she's a big reader, and, you know, and that's, you know, one of the reasons why I'm so into reading as well, you know, from a young age, you know, because she read, and then we would talk about books all the time. And, you know, one book that she desperately wanted me to read for a long time was Khaled Hosseini's The Kite Runner. So she gave me her copy of that, which is a paperback. It is of no financial value at all, but to me it's got strong emotional value. It sits in my collection, and if I was to choose from any book to keep, it would be that one, because it was one that she adored and she loved and she was passionate about, and the fact that she sort of held it and read it and all those emotions that she experienced from reading it, it's important to me, and, you know, I would never get rid of it, so it kind of has a special place in my really bookshelf lovely. In my heart.
That's really lovely. I absolutely love that book. You talked about books with heart. That book has a huge amount of heart.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, wonderful story. And I think that A Thousand Splendid Suns, his second book, also, it broke me. I mean, it left me in tears, and I was just quite emotional after reading that. He's such a wonderful writer.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really lovely to know about that. What books have you read recently that you really, really loved? What would you recommend so the readers want to know all about the books that are coming, maybe? Or what books have you read that they might want to buy? What would you recommend?
A couple of books I really loved recently are, I've just finished Bram McGilloway's The Empty Room, which I thought was fantastic. I think it's his best book to date. Wonderful story. A nightmare for every parent.
Another Northern Irish writer. He is wonderful, and obviously I represent him, so obviously you've got an early proof
yeah.
from that.
And Victoria Silman's Truly Dark ADB is wonderful. I'm currently reading Hidden Depths by Araminta Hall, which I just think is wonderful. You know, she's such a brilliant writer.
Well, Araminta was on the podcast earlier, so she'll be delighted to hear that. Again, it's another book that I've read that I absolutely love. It's
yeah.
a very clever, very brilliant book. Anything else you read a lot?
Oh, Later by Stephen King, which I absolutely loved too. Thought was wonderful. And it's hard, one of his hard crime thrillers,
right.
but it's kind of supernatural. So it's about a boy who can speak to the dead.
Oh, wow.
And his mother, who's a literary agent, and her girlfriend, who's a cop. And it's a kind of story between them.
See, now I don't know that book. Who published it?
Hard Crime. Whoever, I don't know if they're an imprint, but it's...
In the UK?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. A small book.
Okay.
You can borrow my copy.
Thanks very much. But I mean, he's prolific, isn't he?
Oh, he's amazing. You know, so Stephen King, John Irving is another big favorite of mine. His writing has made me cry sometimes, you know, in his stories. You know, he's a brilliant storyteller, and some of his stuff just made me cry. Sarah Waters, I love and adore. also. And I think one of my all-time favorite books is also obviously Wuthering Heights, which is a brutal, brutal book, but I adore it.
See No Evil by David Fennell says this: for this killer, it's death at first sight. The brilliantly dark serial killer thriller from one of Britain's crime writing's freshest stars, perfect for fans of Chris Carter, Karen Slaughter, and N.W. Craven. Two men are found dead in London's Battersea Park. One of the bodies has been laid out like a crucifix, with his eyes removed and placed on his open palms. Detective Inspector Grace Archer and her caustic DS Harry Quinn lead the investigation. But when more bodies turn up in a similar fashion, they find themselves in a race against time to find the sadistic killer. The hunt leads them to Lady Well Play Tower in East London, the home to a religious commune led by the enigmatic Aaron Cronin. Archer and Quinn suspect Cronin's involvement, but his alibis are watertight and the truth seemingly buried. If Archer is to find the killer, she must first battle her way through religious fanatics, London gangsters, and her own demons. And I'm delighted that Gulzer Books have commissioned a beautiful edition of See No Evil with icons sprayed on the page edges. It's available to buy directly on our website now. It's very successful and certainly very popular. We have a few copies left. David, I know that Alfred Hitchcock is a big influence on you, isn't he? And didn't Alfred Hitchcock give you some inspiration for See No Evil?
Yes, indeed. There's a scene in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds where Lydia Brenner, who is the mother of Mitch Brenner, goes to visit her friend Dan at his cottage. She lets herself in and finds the kitchen is covered in broken crockery and glass, which she's confused about. So she begins the search for Dan, calling his name. The camera follows her, like as Alfred Hitchcock does, through the house. And she goes into his bedroom and she sees the bedroom has been ravaged by violent birds. And on the floor, she sees Dan's pajamaed legs covered in blood. And then she looks up to his face and she sees his eyes have been pecked out and all is left is two bloody dark holes. And Hitchcock, you know, does two twitching close-ups very quickly that add a sort of dizzying horror to that whole scene. And when I seen that one, I first seen that when I was 11, it absolutely traumatized me. And it's an image that still to this day sticks with me. And I watched it on YouTube quite recently. That's just that scene, and it's still, it's so visceral and it's so shocking. It still stuck with me. So that was kind of present with me while writing this book. Although there are no birds in this book and it's, you know, no one's eyes get pecked out.
No, you do much worse than that.
Yeah, you're right.
But that's so funny because actually I remember you telling me about the inspiration for The Art of Death is also a horror, slightly horror. Yes. It's one of those psychological horrors, I guess. Because you and I, when we first met and started working together, I told you about a horror movie that I had seen as a child that scared the bejesus out of me.
La Cabina.
La Cabina, yeah. Spanish horror movie that I watched late at night as a child, which I should not have done, but I couldn't sleep and I went down to watch TV and it was on. And I would never go in the telephone box ever as a child because I was terrified to be locked in it. But basically that kind of inspired you with The Art of Death. It not inspired you, but it certainly gave you imagery that you wanted to use.
Absolutely. We love that short, that horror short, Spanish horror short, and it's still available now and you can watch it for free online.
You say we love it. I don't love it. I'm terrified by it. And I said to you, I will never go in the telephone box. And as a child, we didn't have mobile telephony and I had to use the telephone box to let mum and dad that I was... tell them I was coming home, but I would always hold the door open with my foot. I would never let the door close on me, ever.
Yeah. So, you know, it's the story of a man who meets an unfortunate demise inside this box, then this telephone box. And
we've kind of given it away.
And Well, it's a horror. No one gets away scot-free.
Awful.
And it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. Absolutely. So I wanted to capture some of that sort of image, or that feeling of, being in a box and a glass box, which of course is what Damien Hirst does with his art, I wanted to, do this in human form.
Yeah. I mean, your books are very visual, and there is no doubt that anyone reading your books will not be able to visualize what you are writing. You're so brilliant at that. Page turning and visual is the perfect read for me. David, thank you so much for giving up your time to come onto my podcast and talk to me about your books. See No Evil is published on the 28th of April. The Art of Death is available now. If you haven't read them, go and buy them and scare yourselves to death.
Thank you.
Subscribe now and follow Goldsborough Books on socials to keep up to date with our latest news and to learn who will be joining me on Confessions of a Book Collector, your new favourite podcast.